56. Combinat piece. Mr. Fontaine, Rydell said, you wouldn't have another gun around here, would you? The three of them were sitting on the floor in a row, their backs to the wall nearest Oakland, in the back room of Fontaine's little shop. Between Rydell and Fontaine, the duffel with the projector. The kid who'd been sleeping on the floor there was sitting up in Fontaine's narrow bunk, back against the opposite wall, clicking through something on a notebook. Had one of those big-ass old military displays on, made him look like a robot or something, except you could see the bottom half of his face. See, he kept his mouth open while he was doing it. The lights were all off, so you could see the steady pulse of pixel glow leaking from the helmet, from whatever it was he kept pulling up. I don't deal in firearms, the black man said. Vintage watches, knives by name makers, die-cast military. Rydell thought he'd had enough to do with knives already. I just don't like sitting here waiting.
Nobody does, Chivette said beside him. She was pressing a wet cloth against her eye.
Actually, what bothered Rydell most about sitting was that he wasn't sure how easy it would be to get back up. His side, with the duct tape on it now, didn't hurt too badly, but he knew he'd stiffen up. He was about to ask Fontaine about the knives when Fontaine said,
Well?
Well, what? Rydell asked.
Well, Fontaine said, it isn't actually part of my stock, you know.
What isn't?
I've got this lawyer. He's African Union, you know, forced out by politics.
Yeah?
Yeah, Fontaine said. But you know how it is. People come out of a situation like that, all that ethnic cleansing and shit.
Yeah?
Well, they like to feel they got protection. Something happens.
Rydell was definitely interested.
Trouble is, Fontaine said, they got this overkill mentality over there. And my lawyer, Marshall, he's like that.
Actually, he's trying not to be, understand? Got him a therapist and everything. Trying to learn to walk around without a gun and not feel he's liable to get his ass blown away by tribal enemies, right? Like, this is America here, you know? I think you're still liable to get your ass blown away by tribal enemies in America, Mr. Fontaine.
That's true, Fontaine said, shifting his buttocks. But Marshall's got that post-traumatic thing, right?
You help him with these problems? You help him by holding a weapon for him, Mr. Fontaine, something he wouldn't want to keep on his own premises? Fontaine looked at Rydell, pursed his lips, nodded.
Where is it?
It's in the wall behind us. Rydell looked at the wall between them. This is plywood?
Most of it, Fontaine said, swinging around. See here? This part's a patch, gypsum wall filler. We built a box in here, put it in, plastered it over, painted.
Guess someone could find it with a metal detector, Rydell said, remembering being trained how to search for stashes like this.
I don't think it has a lot of metal in it, Fontaine said. Anyway, not in the delivery system.
Can we see it?
Well, said Fontaine, once we get it out, I'm stuck with it.
No, Rydell said. I am. Fontaine produced a little bone-handled pocket knife, opened it, started digging gingerly at the wall.
We could get a bigger knife, Rydell suggested.
Hush, Fontaine said. As Rydell watched, the point of the knife exposed a dark ring the size you'd wear on your finger. Fontaine pried it up and out of the hardened plaster, but it seemed to be fastened to something.
You pull this, okay?
Rydell slid his middle finger through the ring, tugged it a little. Felt solid.
Go on, Fontaine said. Hard!
Plaster cracked, tore loose, as the fine steel wire attached to the ring pulled out around the patch, cutting through it like dry cheese. A rough, inch-thick rectangle coming away in Rydell's hand. Fontaine was pulling something out of the rectangular recess that had been exposed, something wrapped in what looked like an old green shirt. Rydell watched as Fontaine gingerly unwrapped the green cloth, exposing a squat, heavy object,
that looked like a cross between the square waxed paper milk cartons of Rydell's childhood and an industrial power drill. It was a uniform dusty olive green in color, and if it was in fact a firearm, it was the clumsiest looking firearm Rydell had yet seen. Fontaine held it, with what would have been the top of the milk carton pointed up at an angle toward the ceiling. There was an awkward-looking pistol grip at the opposite end, and a sort of grooved broom-handle affair about 6 inches in front of that.
"What is it?" Rydell asked.
"Chain gun," Fontaine said. "Disposable. Can't reload it. Caseless. This long square thing's the cartridges and the barrel in one. No moving parts to it. Ignition's electrical. Two buttons here where the trigger would be. You just point it, press 'em both the same time. It'll do that 4 times. 4 charges.
Why do they call it a chain gun?
What this is, Marshall says, is more like a directional grenade, you understand? Or sort of like a portable fragmentation mine. Main thing he told me is you don't use it in any kind of confined space, and you only use it when there's nobody in front of you you don't mind seeing getting really fucked up.
So what's the chain part?
Fontaine reached over and tapped the fat square barrel lightly once with his forefinger.
In here. Things packed with 400 2-foot lengths of superfine steel chain, sharp as razor wire.
Rydell hefted the thing by its two grips, keeping his fingers away from those buttons.
And that
makes hamburger, Fontaine said.
I heard a shot, Chevette said, lowering her wet cloth. I didn't hear anything, Rydell said.
I did, Chevette said. Just one.
You wouldn't hear much, that little 22, Fontaine said.
I don't think I can stand this, Chevette said.
Now Rydell thought he heard something. Just a pop, short, sharp, but just the one.
You know, he said, I think I'm going to take a look.
Chevette leaned in close, her one eye purple-black and swollen almost completely shut, the other gray and fierce, scared and angry all at once.
It's not a television show, Rydell. You know that? You know the difference? It's not an episode of anything. It's your life. And mine. And his,
pointed to Fontaine.
And his,
pointing at the kid across the room.
So why don't you just sit there?
Rydell felt his ears start to burn and knew that he was blushing.
I can't just sit here and wait.
I know, she said. I could have told you that. Rydell handed the chain gun back to Fontaine and got to his feet, stiff, but not as bad as he'd expected. Fontaine passed him up the gun.
I need keys to unlock the front.
No, Fontaine said. I didn't do the deadbolts.
Rydell stepped around the shallow section of partition that screened them from the window in the door and the display window. Someone in the shadows opposite cut loose with something automatic, something silenced so efficiently that there was only the machine-like burr of a slide working and the stitching sounds of bullets. Both Fontaine's windows vanished instantly, and the glass front of the counter as well. Rydell found himself on the floor, unable to recall getting there. The gun across the street stopped, abruptly, having chewed its way through a full clip. He saw himself down in the basement range at the academy in Knoxville, ejecting a half-moon clip from the stock of a bullpup assault rifle, pulling out another, and slapping it into place. How long it took. The number of movements, exactly, that it took. There was a high, thin, very regular sound in his ears, and he realized that it was Chevette crying. And then he was up, shoving the milk carton nose of Fontaine's lawyer's Combinat gun over the bottom of the square hole in the door where the glass had been. One of the two buttons he thought must be a safety, and the other filled the air outside with flame, recoil close to breaking his wrist. But nobody, really nobody, was going to be reloading anything. Not over there.